The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk. Winners and sinners. On The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, it is that time of the week again, and I'm delighted to be joined in the Republic of Work by Esther McCarthy, lifestyle editor with the Irish Examiner. Good evening, Esther.
Good evening, Jonathan.
And Joe O'Shea, editor of CorkBO.ie. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening.
It is wonderful to have you here because it means we're nearly there.
Yeah.
We are nearly at the end of the week and we're heading into the weekend, and boy, what a weekend it will be for us Cork types, which we will come back to later on. But we are beginning with winners. And Esther, you have chosen Dua Lipa.
Yes, I have. Not because she sold out the Aviva, not because she got engaged to her lovely fiancé, well, now fiancé, but because she went into O'Donoghue's to celebrate her sellout tour and split the G.
Right, now, to explain this to me now, what that means. That sounds painful. Does that,
it sounds a bit dirty, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the way you said it meant a lot, yeah.
It can be a bit painful. I think I first heard about it from Jamie Dornan on Graham Norton's show. As an Irish person, I've been looking up and saw, like, this has been going on in Ireland for centuries. No, well, I never heard of it. So basically, the first sip that you take from your Guinness, you have to drink enough of it so that the black bit, not the foamy bit, goes immediately in the middle of the G on the Guinness glass. So, you know, if you're getting your Guinness in a Murphy's glass, you're in trouble because you can't do it. So she, you know, put it on X and she was very happy with herself that she managed to. To be fair to her, she gave it a good go. She didn't look like a girl who could split the G to me, but she did it. And then she downed the rest of it.
Can I, again, for the benefit of people who don't drink pints of Guinness, it's quite a gulp, isn't
it? It's more than a gulp, to be fair. And you know, if you're not used to drinking stout, it can be quite an experience. But her face didn't show any stress or worry. She gulped it down like she was sitting on bar stools in Bantry for her whole life. She did a great job of it. And the place went wild, and it went wild on social media. Guinness could not have asked for better branding or, you know, reach, because it got so many views and it got people talking. It did really well for us online. It was one of the most looked at videos on the Irish Examiner as
was
well.
Was her concert any good? Did anyone pay attention to the music at all?
No, it was amazing. She's fantastic. And she did a beautiful tribute to Sinead O'Connor.
I wouldn't have bothered with the whole concert thing if I knew I was going to get that much publicity from splitting the G. I mean, it would have just been, came to Dublin, had a pint, loads of publicity, carried on.
I think her fans would have had something to say about that though, Jonathan. No, it was an amazing concert. It was incredible by all accounts, yeah.
Joe, you're not a Guinness drinker, sure, you're not?
No, but I do know this ancient Irish tradition of splitting the G that goes all the way back to Diageo marketing meeting in 2024. A bit of a brainstorm, you know, and it's great to see
it was
these...
like Arthur's. Arthur's Day.
Actually, please do not mention Arthur's Day, because I was in Dublin for the original Arthur's Day, and the people will not talk about Dunkirk.
Yes.
And the, you know,
that was your Dunkirk.
Or the charge of the Light Brigade, or, Arthur's Day, God almighty, God, that just brought back some pretty terrible flashbacks there. But yes, splitting the G, Dua Lipa, it's very Guinness, it's very marketing friendly, and it's very social media friendly. This whole splitting the G thing, never heard of it until about a year ago.
It did seem to come up a little bit then, and at the risk of offending people, didn't seem to generate from this country.
No,
it seemed to have been a thing across the pond where they couldn't pour a pint to save their
life. Exactly, and this thing, I do drink stout, but if I do, it'll be Murphy's or Beamish.
Because you're a local brand, usually.
Beamish. Not because of any partisan thing, but because it just tastes better. Beamish, if anybody ever hasn't had it before, is like coffee stout, basically. And I like that taste, right? Splitting the G, to me, it's a waste of a pint, isn't it? I mean, you're not supposed to gulp stout. That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
I don't know, though. My two granddads both drank Guinness, and they'd always take a good big slurp first.
My father, God rest him, when he would have had a pint of Guinness, and this is back in the 80s now, he moved on as a sophisticated man in his later years. Pint of Guinness for him was three gulps.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, just like one gulp, another gulp, and finish.
Obviously,
and
I've been hanging around with a very quiet crowd for all these
And there
years,
are other alcoholic beverages available,
yes.
It's amazing, though, because it's down to the colour contrast, I'm guessing, Esther, that you can see a very vivid line appear.
Exactly.
And it's a bit of a drinking game, which is to the advantage of the people who are hawking the product.
Absolutely. Sure, O'Donoghue's were delighted as well to have her in the corner throwing the Guinness down her guzzle, like, but it's just kind of nice, you know, the way when you go to a local a new country that she's probably thinking she's doing this big, massive tradition. That has to say, none of us know anything about it. But, you know, fair play to her. It shows that she gets in the spirit of things.
It's great marketing, not only for the brewery in question, but for the pub as well. And I know there are pubs now in Dublin that have full-time social media marketing people on their staff. And all that they do is try and get these videos to go viral. So they're constantly trying to invent stuff like this.
On Pucón in Galway actually has a competition every Wednesday night that if you split the gene, it has to be done in front of a staff member, you get the next pint free.
A stuffed member?
A stuffed member.
Yeah. Okay. They wheel out a stuffed member. Yes.
You're stuffed by the end of it if you drink all the free Guinness. But you get a free pint out of it. So, you know, it is the pubs. Everyone is just trying to get people to buy things, basically.
Can I give you, I mean, I don't want to ruin people's weekend, because this is out there. I recently found a pub that served only products from one brewery.
That happens a lot, but I mean, it's more of an English
it's
thing.
It's an English
thing.
I found an Irish pub, alarming.
I've seen it in Irish pubs, and I know that there are, like, we won't go too deep into this, but you'll be aware there's all sorts of machinations involving the bigger pubs and the bigger breweries, and we'll give you this and we won't give you that, and you can sell this.
Except it was a hotel, I'd have turned around and walked out. Yeah. I was like sitting there going, I'm not going into the Rovers Return. That's not what I'm here for. Yeah. Your winner of the week is unusual, Joe.
Yeah, I'm sure people are going to really applaud this one, but. My winners of the week, it's a lot of them. They're a great bunch of lads, the French air traffic controllers.
You may be the only person in Europe who's cheering the French air traffic controllers. I mean, I'd imagine that sound like the kind of group that would even object to themselves.
Probably, yeah. I just think in a world gone mad, where up is down and black is white, they're the only bunch of people that we can depend on year in, year out, to be consistent, to wait for the first week of July, when everybody's about to go on their holidays, the holiday season kicks off, and the French air traffic controllers, without fail, every first week in July, go on strike. They did this week. Ryanair had to cancel 170 flights. Ryanair alone, 170 flights on the day in question. Airlines across Europe were affected. The reason, I'm being a little facetious, obviously, is calling them winners, but it's interesting to me that, you know, first of all, that they seem to finally have provoked the French government into actually shock horror doing something.
Yeah.
It looks like there will now be, the French government is like, okay, we have to do something this time around. They will move towards what they're looking for. And what they're looking for, especially with the way air travel has been recently, is reasonable enough. They want more staff. They want better working conditions. They want safer skies.
I mean, imagine joining a trade union. I mean, what would be the point of that?
But that's the other thing. In this crazy world we live in, the fact that there are still trade unions out there and they can still wield some sort of power and still make a big noise, even if you're not going to be happy about it, if you're sitting in Dublin or Cork Airport with a delayed flight. That, to me, is interesting because we know that unions have been on the retreat since the 80s, really, in Europe. It's interesting to me that the French keep this going, and maybe it's a sign, especially with they seem to be getting some traction this year, that maybe we can see this coming back and that working people can actually organise.
Would they not maybe just consider doing it sometime in late February as opposed to when everyone's going on their holidays?
I think that's the other thing about the French air traffic controllers. They really don't care about what the public think about them.
So why don't Esther give a passionate critique of French air traffic controllers if you can, please.
Well, all I can say is that travelling is stressful enough, having gone to Spain a couple of weeks ago with the family and dying going up to the Ryanair scene. Can we take the wheels off our bags to make sure it fits? Because all that was going on.
To see you doing some light engineering in an airport.
Like, by the time I got over there, I was like, okay, I never want to see you again, lads. So, yeah, no, I must say I'm with Joe. I think, you know, you have to admire people who can take a stance these days. And
hang on a sec.
Just because I've had my holidays.
I'm back. I'm trying.
You're just one step away from going, they're doing a public service by keeping people out of the heat.
Exactly.
Very close.
I'm going to own a hinge. Yeah, I'm going to own the hinges. I don't need the French air traffic controllers.
But it is remarkable, though, that it keeps coming. I mean, do you know whose blood pressure does terrible things to Michael O'Leary.
Yeah.
Michael O'Leary, he was calling for Ursula von der Leyen to quit this week. And I'm going, she's other things going on, Michael. I know it's important to you.
If you ever hear of a mercenary army being organised in Kildare, they're probably around Michael O'Leary's place, and he's hiring them to take out the French air traffic controllers. Because, you're right, that's the other thing.
Anything that annoys
Michael O'Leary is good.
Get a bit of crack
but didn't
out
they change? I know you don't have the dimensions in front of you. They changed the rules on the bags this week as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. So I think it's another couple of inches off, isn't it?
Off or on? Off.
I thought it was off. Was
I thought they were getting bigger.
I put it back in the office, or in the attic, and I'm never going to think about it until next year again.
The European Union has been looking at this, and there's been a couple of court cases, but also European Union is looking at the rules, not just Ryanair, and Ryanair always gets stick on this, but it's let's be fair, it's all the airlines these days.
But it's not the bag that you wheel along, it's the bag it's you put under the seat.
Under the seat,
I mean, all you have to do, and again, I'm not wishing to give you the trade secrets here, just buy something in duty free and shove everything into that bag. We did that on the way back from Spain. It was a tremendous success.
Vacuum packing, that's the way to go.
Simon Tierney was telling me about that on this very programme last week, and he did brilliantly. He vacuum packed everything. Beautiful. He got to where he was going and they didn't have a Hoover, which meant that he couldn't bring it back. Good and all as he was, he couldn't suck the air.
He doesn't have the lung capacity. We just don't have the lung capacity.
And then not only that, he then brought an actual rocking horse that had been given to one of his kids, and amazingly Ryanair let the rocking horse on board. So I'm thinking we should set a rocking horse challenge. Send reporters to the very far edges of Europe and Ryanair airports and try to get them to bring the rocking horse back. Even you wouldn't chance that,
Sign
Esther.
Sign me up. Yeah. Sounds like a challenge. I love it.
We have got our sinners to come on the way in our winners and sinners in just a bit. It is the winners and sinners on the hard shoulder. Jonathan Healy filling in for Kieran Cuddihy. Right, I was going to say Pat Kenny there because it's been that kind of week. I've been one or the other and the listeners none the wiser. You are picking your sinner of the week, Esther.
Yeah, again, it's a bit of a strange one. Well, not strange, but you know yourself when we're looking at headlines all day long and they kind of mostly go past you. But this one really resonated with me recently because I have a 16-year-old nephew who's on the organ donor list. Now, I have a 16-year-old son as well, so, you know, I'm always looking, God, that could be us. So the laws came out, basically, the opt-in, if you're 18 or older living in Ireland, you're now presumed to actually agree to donate certain organs, that's heart, lungs, liver, pancreas and kidneys, unless you actually go to take the option to opt out, which I would have thought wouldn't be a big deal. Our granddad had a tumour behind his eye when we were younger and the eye was actually perfect, so he donated the eye. So we would always be in a family who would have the way have the battered card in your wallet. Yeah.
Spotted which everywhere. Mm.
Exactly. But the reaction on some of the call-in shows was just fascinating to me. I would have kind of thought, of course, you know, people will go along with this. Where could you find a problem with this? But people did seem to have an issue thinking they're going to be harvesting people's organs at the side of the road and, you know, why are the government trying to make me give my heart to someone if I don't want to? So I suppose it's just a chance for me to kind of go, lads, it's just about having the conversation with your family. It's letting people know your wishes. If you do for any reason, and that is absolutely your prerogative, if you don't want to, let them know and it's fine.
I have a family member who is on his second kidney.
Oh, really?
So therefore, it's something that I feel kind of passionate about as well. And do you know where it's coming from? And actually, it's only recently I spotted this because it's something that when I saw it, what? It's social media, the toxic dump that is social media. And it all originates from America. And it originates from people saying, I'm not giving my organs for them to sell. And that is genuinely an argument that is held and believed by some parts of America where medicine is commercialized. And we know that. But it seems to be spreading, Joe, like there is a conspiracy out there that the government wants to go round and harvest everyone's organs.
I work in digital media. I have to spend a lot of my time on Facebook for work reasons.
You work on the respectable end of digital media.
Well, I do, unfortunately, I have to kind of keep an eye on Facebook a lot. And I got to tell you, this is all over Facebook from the type of people who 5 years ago were refusing to wear masks.
Yeah, from the people who bought you vaccines will kill you.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It's the same people and it's the same type. It's the same mentality. These are people I have to, okay, If you want to opt out, opt out. But these are people who turn it into a religion and have to tell the world, I'm opting out, you should opt out because Bill Gates is coming to harvest your kidneys or whatever
now, Bill is busy.
He's busy.
I mean, I can't
with the microchipping. He's busy with the microchipping.
I can't see him hovering around the CUA just in case somebody came in.
If he needs it anyway,
but
you know what I mean?
There's just, it's cranks. It's cranks and it's people who, it's antisocial. It's people who have to shout at the world, I'm not wearing a mask, I'm not socially distancing, I'm not, you're not taking my organs. Do you know what? Nobody wants your organs, especially your brains. You can hang on to them, all right?
But they're getting louder. Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it?
Like, none of them objected to Ozempic, by the way. They're happy to take Ozempic. Yeah. That's fine, as jabs go.
If you have a relative who's deep into Facebook, and I am deadly serious about this, try and persuade him to get off it, because it just it brings out the worst in people. They go down rabbit holes. They end up getting caught in these stupid, crazy, nasty conspiracy theories. It just turns people into bad people. I am very vehement about this.
It's fascinating, though, that it's come through, because we, like you, Esther, would have always been, let's carry your donor card. There's no question. We've had the open discussions in our house. Take everything. People have a wobble about the eyes.
They do.
They always have a wobble about the eyes, but that's okay, too. Yeah. But for the most part, I've interviewed people over the years, and you know, part of it stems from a tragedy as a rule. Somebody has lost their lives in a tragic situation. Yeah. And the good that comes from that donation is that four or five other people will get another crack at life. And that, to me, is the best tribute you can pay to somebody.
It's an incredible legacy to give, isn't it? Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, they're waiting for a call, but they're very conflicted. And Kieran, as a young guy whose life has turned upside down, is actually like really talks about, God, I have to wait for something really bad to happen to another family for me to get another chance. Like, he's got 3% left in his kidneys. He last year he was out getting the player of the year for his local soccer club. This year he's learning how to tie his line to get his dialysis at home. You know, like, what it will mean to him to be able to get just back in touch, just doing the normal things that a 16-year-old wants to do. He can't go out, he can't go to discos. The match tomorrow, he would have been there with bells on. He can't risk an infection, you know, so that the fact that someone, and like that, like, it's a hard thing to think about, it's a hard thing to talk to about with your kids as well. But, you know, for me to say to the boys, if anything happened, I would want someone else to get your organs instead of putting them in the ground.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating that the government prevaricated on this for a long time and unfortunately introduced it at the worst possible time when this kind of nonsense was getting momentum. Your sinner of the week, Joe?
I don't know how many people in Ireland know Morgan McSweeney. He's not a household name, right? But he really should. He's the chief of staff for Keir Starmer, number 10 Downing Street. He's from Macroom in County Cork. Mm. And not since Michael Collins as a Cork man caused as much trouble for a sitting British Prime Minister as Morgan McSweeney. And I am fascinated by this, because Morgan McSweeney is a fascinating guy. He's from a very kind of traditional Fine Gael family. His cousin was a special advisor to Leo Varadkar. And he's from North Cork. And he had an unusual path into politics. The very brief, he went to 17, went to London, worked on building sites, tried college, washed out, went back and tried again, became a summer intern with the Labour Party, and rose from literally answering phones in Labour Party HQ to become possibly the most powerful man in British politics after Keir Starmer.
That seems like a terrible, unfortunate series of events.
God love him. What did he do?
Yeah. So, but he's also become the bete noire for everybody who hates Keir Starmer, and there are a lot of people.
It's a growing list.
It's a long queue. And Morgan McSweeney has become the kind of the lightning rod, because apparently he's the man, he's the brains behind the operation. He's the man who's masterminded Labour's kind of lurch to the right. Labour's kind of the cost cutting, all the trouble. And I'm fascinated by UK politics, because it's so dramatic and it's been crazy since Brexit. They've lost their minds since Brexit, you know. And Morgan McSweeney it seems to be only a matter of time before Keir Starmer throws him under the bus.
But Starmer's going to have to blame somebody. Because at the moment he's if there was an election tomorrow, your man from Clacton-on-Sea would be the Prime Minister.
Now, reform is starting to slide in the polls a bit, because they actually took over a couple of councils and people are looking at what they put an 18-year-old guy in charge of a council.
I think we should try that as an experiment.
I'm going to pick
Roscommon. Yeah, I think we should put an 18-year-old in charge of Roscommon County Council and see how it happens.
But it's fascinating. Like I said, I'm probably too invested in UK politics. I did live in London for a while fairly recently. But Morgan McSween to me is a fascinating character. And it's just, it shows how one guy can become the kind of lightning rod for all of the huge crisis that's going on in the UK.
It's interesting he's described as the brains behind Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer doesn't seem to have many brains himself. I can't understand for an intelligent man how he is so inept.
Yeah, Esther. And he just has no charisma.
No,
sure he doesn't.
Bit of a void, really.
Yeah, it is really strange. Think how these characters rise up and become so important, and their decisions and how they act.
What he replaced was so mad.
I know.
He seemed normal at the time.
It was all in comparison.
Yeah, but if they brought out the stuffed staff member that you referenced earlier, that would have seemed normal compared to Boris Johnson.
It's a year
today that the election was held, that they got Labour got a landslide victory, a historic landslide victory. And you think, you know, after that, you'd at least have a year where things didn't go
just
disastrously wrong.
Too much to ask for.
Yeah, but see, I think it's the classic thing. Well, we inherited a mess.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it is now our fault because we're now there a year and it hasn't gotten any better. Yeah. I mean, the one thing you'll say about the crises we've had here, you know, when I suppose there was a bit of continuity, if we could describe it thus, was that, you know, at least decisions were made and they got on with them. They don't seem to be able to make a decision, Joe.
They're paralysed. And it's a lot of it comes back to Brexit, because nobody can tell the British, the Labour Conservatives, they can't tell the British public the truth about Brexit. It's been a disaster for them. And until they face up to that, they're not going to be able to move anywhere. Nigel Farage, I think, is a bit of a sideshow, to be honest with you, because eventually when they get to the next election, surely people can't vote.
Don't say it, Prime Minister Farage.
Actually, no, that's like saying it out loud. Yeah. I'm like, actually, they could do it. Yeah, they really could.
Well, guaranteed what is going to happen is just as the European Union and Britain has reached a reset, whereby it stops being nonsense, your man will come back in he'll just rip it all up and he won't give two hoots because he will have a mandate from the people who for some reason voted. Something in the water, I'd say, Esther.
Is it the air quality? I don't know.
Nice and warm over there this week as well. They've had the heat. Anyway, Morgan McSweeney is certainly feeling the heat, our sinner of the week. There's one big thing we have to talk about, but I'm going to take a break first. We are definitely nearly there now, towards the end of what has been a very busy week, but oh by God, is this the weekend that Cork people are looking forward to, and to a lesser degree, Dublin. The funny thing for me is that I was cheering Dublin for the first time in my life against Limerick. I'd never before, and God willing, will never cheer again for the Dubs. So it was a very temporary thing for all of us, I think, Esther, wasn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. But listen, what a semi-final we have. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's a weird sense around town, Joe. I mean, everyone is excited. Everyone is looking forward to it. But nobody dares speak it. Nobody wants to say out loud that we might win it.
I'll say it out loud.
You're not allowed to talk. You're not allowed to talk. We don't want you to put the eggs on
Sorry,
it.
Gwendo.
Esther's being loudly confident in the corner there. I actually have a kind of a bad feeling about this. I actually said it to friends of mine that I thought Dublin were going to beat Limerick. I honestly said that before the game.
And well, the stop clock is right twice.
Yeah, you got to be right sometimes, don't you? Because Limerick have been, but hurling has become so hard to predict in recent years. You have these crazy results where one team will beat another team, then 2 weeks later will get absolutely slaughtered by them, then come back 2 weeks later and beat them again. You know, Cork and Limerick this year is what we've seen. It's thrilling. It's going to be the biggest game of the year. It's going to sell out in Croke Park. You know, the atmosphere is going to be great. I've always had a graw for Dublin hurling because I lived in Dublin for 25 years.
Oh, London, yeah. Dublin. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
International
man of sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always been hurling. They've always tried very hard in Dublin, and there's real strong roots in the game up there. They just haven't had a success. I was watching BBC Two Northern Ireland. There's a great series on at the moment called The Game. It's about the history of hurling.
I saw a bit of that the other night.
Fantastic.
It's really good.
And I was watching it and the famous Cork four in a row team of the 40s played Dublin four All-Ireland finals. They played Dublin three times in the All-Ireland final. I think it was 1940, 1941 and 1942 or something like that, and beat Dublin three times. So there is actually history there.
Yeah.
I went to a Dublin Cork game.
In the 1940s?
In the 1940s.
Well,
sorry.
I knew that Isle of Ule was too good
to
go. No, I went to a game, Cork Dublin, a few years ago now. And I was sitting with a good friend of mine, and we did the worst possible thing you can ever do in a game, because Dublin played really well, and they really kind of put it up to Cork, but Cork pulled away in the last 10 minutes. We had two Dublin fans in front of us, and they were really, really down and disappointed. My friend turned around to him and said, and probably meant it well, but said, "Well, lads, you gave us a great game. Well done." And the two, I was like, let's get out of here.
While patting them on the head,
yeah. You know, so... it's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, you have the misery of working tomorrow, which means you can't go.
Yeah.
But Esther, you're hitting the road early in the morning, like me.
Yes, me and my husband and my three boys. Well, the oldest one abandoned us to get the bus. He doesn't want to go.
Well, I wouldn't blame him, to be quite honest.
Yeah. So we're really excited about it. Kind of like have the Sangers packed, have the,
a good
the red and white
GAA
clothes
day out.
Yeah. But we had, like, the thing about hurling and what it comes back to, you know, seeing my own kids doing it. We had a gorgeous story this week with this guy, Raphael Olympio, who came from Africa, ended up in Toker, which is only around the corner from us. He's in the West Cork Literary Festival next week. That's why we spoke to him. But he said when he got there, every house had like a hurley and he didn't know what it was. And John Egan was one of his neighbours, who's a Kerry legend, and he got him a hurley, you know, showed him how to wrap it, brought him out, showed him how to puck the ball, got him into the Ga, and he said it completely just changed his life, that hurling for him was a way to integrate into the community, made friends. He said afterwards he realised his parents were probably struggling at the time, and that GAA and hurling like really made a difference to him, and now he helps with the Cork Migrant Centre. He's a poet, he's a you know, just the power of a stick and a ball and what it can do. And when we beat Dublin tomorrow, what it can do for Cork.
A hostage for fortune.
Can I point out, McCarthy, if it goes wrong tomorrow evening, I'm going to find you in Croke Park.
It absolutely won't.
Of course, we do have to doff our caps to Kilkenny and Tipperary, who'll be playing.
Oh yeah. Is there another game?
I tell you something, it won't sell out. But one of them will face either Dublin or Cork, so it's going to be a great weekend. Shut up, you. A great weekend of hurling either way. It's been an absolute pleasure. Esther McCarthy, Joe O'Shea, have a lovely weekend. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.